In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball. Let's
all go to time indeed to Pass the Popcorn, talk movies and more as Alan Adams joins us in studio. Good Monday to you, Dr. Adams.
And to you as well, sir.
We spent some quality time together yesterday at our annual fantasy baseball draft, and the general consensus is that you're loaded.
The coffee brandies are looking pretty good this year.
Ooh, my goodness. I mean, you had a good nucleus going in. You had a lot of money.
Yep.
And you spent it pretty well. Raised some eyebrows with some big spending early on, but you got to pay for quality, right?
Well, and that was the thing. And again, like when you're first out of the gate with some of this stuff, it's like, oh, okay, but the truth was, like, a lot of people had kept a lot of really good guys.
Yeah.
And so, like, the pool of available players is pretty shallow.
Mm.
So if you want one of the top tier guys, like, you're going to have to pay for it.
Yeah.
And I was lucky that I had the money to do that.
And some of those guys you got looked like bargains when we saw some of the spending later on.
Well, that was the thing, too. It's like, oh, well, I may have spent, I may have spent $4 or $5 more than anticipated on some of these guys. But then when you see people spending $10 or $12 more than they anticipated on guys who are potentially terrible.
Yes.
It's like, oh, right. Okay. I'm feeling pretty good about what happened, right. ninety minutes ago.
You didn't spend $18 on Matt Vierling, so you should feel pretty good about that. Who's the guy you came out of there with that you were happiest to have?
Well, I mean, I like the easy ones are like I had three specific players in mind that I wanted to leave the draft with, and I got two of them. Kyle Tucker from the Astros, who wound up being, I believe, the most expensive player in
yes.
the auction, and Josh Hader, the closer for the Astros. The third was Juan Soto, who went for almost as much as Tucker did,
yeah.
And I wasn't going to be able to hang with that, especially since it was pretty clear that Preble was ready to go.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I was happy. I wanted to come away with Jose Ramirez, and I did.
Nice.
Again, spent a little more than I thought I would, but I'm happy to have him. And Joe Ryan of the Twins, who I like a lot, and got it less than I thought.
Yeah, no, like the Joe Ryan pickup was a really good one for you. But yeah, it was wild, and we went hitter heavy early, and so like when the pitching started to roll out, it's like it was a lot of the money had been dispersed.
Yeah.
So it wasn't necessarily as sort of wild, wild westy as it was at the top of things. Who's the top starter that went? Was it Corbin Burns
yeah.
went for the highest amount?
Yep.
You know, $30.
Yep.
Like, but I mean, if he stays on the field, like, it's going to be worth it.
Right, right. That was a lot of fun, as always. Good luck to you and the coffee brandies this season.
And to the organs as well.
Thank you, thank you. Did you see any movies?
You know, I did, actually. Mm. I saw a couple.
All right. Let's hear about it.
Well, I made it out to the movie theater, actually in the middle of all of it on Saturday.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yep.
Was anybody else there?
It was surprisingly busy.
Wow.
Well, we went before, we went to one of the early shows. So it was like, it was before the shift to the wintry mix had happened.
Yeah.
So it's just, there's a lot of blowing snow, but it wasn't that bad. But yeah, we went to see the new Ghostbusters movie, Ghostbusters
Ooh.
Frozen Empire. And then later that evening, we snuggled onto our couch with our critters and watched the remake of Roadhouse.
Oh,
so
nice.
we could talk about either one of those.
Wow.
We're going to have a good time regardless. So let's go.
Well, I have a soft spot in my heart for both of the originals here. Let's start with Roadhouse
okay.
and hear what Jake Gyllenhaal brought to the table.
Yeah, so it's, for those who are unfamiliar, Roadhouse is one of the greatest movies ever made, starring Patrick Swayze as a bouncer in the titular Roadhouse. It's one of those things where you're always leery. It's like, do you really want to try to, capture that lightning in a bottle twice? Because I love Jake Gyllenhaal. He's no Patrick Swayze.
No, and you got no Jeff Healey anymore. And,
right.
And no Ben Gazzara, right?
In yeah.
Yeah.
But we got, so this new one, it's directed by Doug Liman, and stars the aforementioned Gyllenhaal, Daniela Melchior, J.D. Pardo, Arturo Castro, Billy Magnuson. It's a pretty good cast.
Mm-hmm.
And in his feature film debut, Conor McGregor.
Oh yes, I've heard about this.
Conor McGregor is our big bad of sorts. But yeah, so the basic gist, it's more or less the it's like the original. It's basically a Western. Like a mysterious stranger comes into town to clean things up.
Is there a band playing in a cage? That's what I want to know.
There are several different bands playing in a cage at different times.
All right, good.
Like anytime you have a band with like chicken wire in front of them, you're like, okay. I know. I understand what kind of place this is, yes. And I look forward to seeing what happens next.
Definitely.
Jake Gyllenhaal plays Elwood Dalton.
Okay.
a disgraced former UFC fighter, whose tragic past is doled out to us in bite-sized portions over the course of the film. Suffice to say, his final fight did not go the way he would have wanted it to, and so he apparently walks the earth now like Kane from Kung Fu. Again, his whole deal is never at all established. We meet him when he's sort of wandering around trying to find these various underground fighting things, gambling situations, where apparently I had no idea that there was such a proliferation of take all comers underground boxing clubs, but apparently that's a thing. We first meet Dalton when he is stepping into the ring to accept the all comers challenge by a shirtless tattooed fellow played by, and I didn't mention him before because he's only in the movie for a minute, Post Malone.
Okay.
Yeah, I was like, it's one of those things where it's like they all kind of look the same, but it's like, with all the face tattoos, right, and stuff, you're just like, is that?
He's got the grill too, right?
Yeah, he's got all the stuff.
Oh yeah.
But this is when we first learn just what Dalton's deal is, because when Post Malone sees him come in, like take his like hoodie off and like start to get ready to fight, the guy's like, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to fight that guy. I'm out of here.
So
Jake Gyllenhaal gets the money. For reasons, it's not clear, but that's when he is recruited by a woman who owns a roadhouse in the Florida Keys, a roadhouse called, I swear to God, it's called the Roadhouse.
Oh,
it's a roadhouse called the Roadhouse. The Roadhouse,
fantastic. What can we call this thing? Roadhouse. Just call it the Roadhouse.
So she basically offers him $5,000 a week to come clean up the Roadhouse, and it's like, wow, I had no idea this was such a lucrative kind of situation, especially since it appears that your bar gets absolutely demolished every single night. Like, I don't understand where the money's coming from. But anyway, so he takes the bus, goes down to the Keys, comes on in, and immediately starts, kicking butt and taking names.
Yeah,
and he doesn't really care that much about the names. We quickly see that he is more than capable of handling himself in these sorts of situations, but that's when we discover that there's a bad guy out there who's an evil fellow who's looking to turn the entire island into a resort.
Oh,
and the Roadhouse is the last holdout, and that's why she's been having all this trouble, is because they're trying to drive her out so they can do the evil resort thing and drive all the hardworking people of Glass Key out into, I don't know, the ocean or other islands. I don't know where they're gonna go. But Dalton's not gonna have that.
No.
And so there's just a bunch of fighting. So much fighting.
And Gyllenhaal has clearly worked with a personal trainer a bit here to get ready.
Man, near as I can tell, he's essentially made of HGH at this point. You know what it looks like when someone's in shape, and you see like the sort of like cartoony muscles that some of these, but like, I mean, Gyllenhaal is ripped. Yeah. He is yoked in this, and it is just like he takes his shirt off for the first time, and you're just like, holy hell, Donnie Darko, what is going on, my man? But yeah, I mean, he looks great. And clearly did some training as well, as far as like to sort of handle himself as a fighter. But anyway, so our bad guy is like, well, we got to do something about this Dalton fella. And so a favor gets called in, and the mysterious weirdo known only as Knox, this would be Conor McGregor, rolls up and is basically, Actually, you know, credit where credit is due. Jason Preble actually described, summed up McGregor in this movie perfectly. Basically, a psychotic Scottish Popeye. Like, that's that's like, with, wow, like walking, like weird, yeah, like weird bow legged walk, like elbows out, like very, very muscly and like strutty, and you know, and let's be honest, Mr. McGregor, not a good actor.
Shocking.
But that's not what he's here for.
No, no.
He is here to just beat the ever loving heck out of Jake Gyllenhaal.
Yeah, bring the pain, baby.
And you know what? He does that a couple of times. You know, and then you have your climactic battles, and well, you could probably guess how it all turns out, but you'll have to watch to find out for sure.
All right.
Yeah, no, it's super fun. Like, it's not as good as the first one.
No.
It was never going to be. You know, it doesn't have quite the same, like, I don't even know how to describe it. Like, there's a weird heartbeat.
Yes.
To the original Roadhouse.
Yes, I almost said a sweetness, but that's not quite
it's,
the right
it's
word.
It's not quite right.
But you cared about those people.
Sincerity, maybe? Yeah. Like, it's like, it just felt like there was far too genuine a vibe for the kind of like B movie beat 'em up that it was.
Right. But a lot of that was Swayze.
Yes. And you don't really get as much of that here. Like, Gyllenhaal's great, but it's just like it feels like they focused more on the fighting. But you know, the action sequences are mostly good. Sometimes it gets a little like weird and CGI-y in places, and you're not entirely sure why, because like, you know, like McGregor is obviously a professional fighter, and Gyllenhaal has taken the time to, you know, prepare himself for this. Like, just like, let's just do it for real. Like, let's not worry about like the special effects quite so much. So that was kind of a bummer, but all in all, like, man, there are worse ways to pass some time. Like, as someone who, again, has deep love in his heart for the original, we didn't need this new Roadhouse, but I'm okay that we have it.
All right. Excellent. And now, how about Ghostbusters Frozen Empire? I like what I've seen in the trailer so far.
You know, I'm actually kind of a believer in these sequels in a way that I don't know that other people are. Again, like, I obviously, as you know, as a child of the 80s, Ghostbusters and Ghostbusters 2 have a very special place in my heart. You know, I'm also one of the you know, apparently few people out there who genuinely liked the 2016 reboot with the all-female cast.
Yeah.
And now that we've sort of ventured back into the original air quotes, sort of Ghostbusters universe, with the movie, I forget what the subtitle was, back in 2020, and now we have this new one, Frozen Empire, where we have moved away from the Spengler family farm in Oklahoma, and we're back in New York City, because that's where the Ghostbusters are supposed to be.
Exactly.
The movie's directed by Gil Keenan, who co-wrote the screenplay with Jason Reitman, who, by all accounts, appears to be the sort of heir apparent for the Ghostbusters franchise. Although I am a little surprised he didn't direct this one. I'm not entirely sure what the story is there, but so we've got it's a stacked cast again. Paul Rudd, Carrie Coon, Finn Wolfhard, McKenna Grace, Celeste O'Connor, they're all back from Afterlife, that's what it was called.
That's it.
Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd, Ernie Hudson, Annie Potts, in much more than the, let's be frank, their appearances in the previous movie were basically cameos.
Yes.
Like glorified cameos. Mm-hmm. Like big cameos, but still cameos.
Right.
They're much more an integral part.
Oh, good.
Of this, and this I'm gonna mention this because I just want to be the one to say it to you. The mayor of New York City in this, Walter Peck.
No.
William Atherton is back.
Wow.
As Walter Peck.
Wow.
This man has no, you know what I was going to say. I'm not going to say it on the radio. So that was a fun little
nice.
Sort of like, it's like, oh, okay. Yeah, we're going for it. So basically we've got the Spengler family, along with Gary Gruberson, that's Paul Rudd, have moved to New York City to take up the mantle of ghost busting, thanks to the deep pockets of philanthropist and millionaire Winston Zeddemore, Ernie Hudson. So he's renovated the firehouse. Ecto One is back. Like, they've got all the gear, the whole shebang. Meanwhile, Ray Stantz, Dan Aykroyd, is running a weird curiosity shop in New York City, because of course he is.
Yes.
They're just out there busting ghosts. But as we've learned from the history of the Ghostbusters, Walter Peck does not care for Ghostbusters.
No.
And he is looking for any excuse to shut them down. And as often happens in the pursuit of ghosts, there's a significant amount of property damage. We see that pretty early on. And so that leads to the youngest Spengler, played by McKenna Grace, getting benched, and that leads to her making friends with a ghost, because of course it does. Meanwhile, there's a mysterious orb, a mysterious metal orb that contains something. We don't know what it is. All we know is that a young man played by Kumail Nanjiani found it in his grandmother's house and sold it to Ray.
Well.
And it turns out to be, well, it's evil, Rich.
Oh.
It's an evil thing.
Oh, that kind.
Yeah, it's not great. It's the standard sort of Ghostbusters formula of messing with forces beyond that which we understand. And before you know it, looks like the world might end. We're going to have to do something about this.
Oh, boy.
Luckily, we have the Ghostbusters. Yeah, right? Bullet dodged. This isn't like, again, these sequels do not rise to the level of the original films. And I say this as someone who hasn't watched the original in a while. You see rumblings on the internet where it's like, perhaps parts of it haven't held up particularly well. I believe the term is problematic.
Yes.
Which,
sure.
It's the 80s.
Right.
Like, those were just, those
times changed.
That was just how you made movies back then.
Right.
It's very sweet. Like, the family dynamic, I think, is a welcome shift. I think bringing in the original Ghostbusters in roles that are a little bit more robust is fun. It's mostly Ernie Hudson. We do get some Dan Aykroyd. Bill Murray does show up kind of later in the film, and we do get him at the everyone's around for the climax, so that's good. It's a very sweet sort of like familial kind of relationship, and that I think makes it different enough while still maintaining some of that spirit where it's like you can kind of see the pathway going forward. Which they obviously can too. Like, they're obviously hoping that this sort of franchise can continue, has legs.
And Paul Rudd is great in everything.
Well, that's the thing. And it's like, probably maybe in some of the Apatow stuff, I'm not entirely sure he's ever been as Paul Rudd as he is in this movie. I mean, he is the ruddiest of the Rudd.
Wow.
There's one particular sequence. I'm not going to spoil it to you because it was such a delight. But it is a very specific and overt reference to the original Ghostbusters Sheridan and I, like, we could not stop laughing. I don't know that anyone else in the theater really was with us. But it was hilarious. Like, we brought it up again in the car on the way home and laughed some more. Like, it was that kind of thing.
Nice.
It's very much it's a very reverent sort of film in that it's very respectful and clearly has deep affection for the source material, which makes a difference, particularly when you're tackling something that is so beloved kind of generationally beloved. Like, and I understand that you're creating these movies for a new generation, but man, you got to get us Gen Xers.
Yeah.
You got to get us in the theater for this to work. And they did a really good job, I think, of balancing, you know, the sort of fan service of the originals and then sort of bringing something, you know, new to the table.
Trying to think, but was it 84, 85 when the original came out?
I think it was 84.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it was 84 for Ghostbusters, and I want to say 89 for Ghostbusters 2.
Wow.
A very, very
both that very those numbers time. They don't add up to me.
It's like, I don't know.
Because you say that and I think, oh, so like 20, 25 years ago. No.
Nope.
40.
Yeah.
Ah!
Yeah. But some good effects work. You know, it's never going to quite live up to the, I don't know, one of the joys of the movies from that, you know, from the 80s and the early 90s is that sort of the necessity of dealing with limitation in terms of this sort of like special effects driven right. kind of thing. And so you get a lot more practical effects and a lot more like in-camera stuff. Mm. And it's just like, and that's great. And it just, and there's an organicness to it yeah. that I don't think you necessarily get with CGI all the time. Although they get close with a couple of the characters, including a beloved holdover that turns up in this one. The performances are great. Like I said, Rudd's wonderful. Carrie Coon, kind of wish she had a little bit more to do. Like, she's so talented. Mm. And like... She's not like full on, like it's not just like reduced to just mom, but it's closer to that than you want
yeah.
for someone like this. Finn Wolfhard is, you know, he spends most of his time making sure everyone knows that he's 18 now, which is hilarious. And I imagine that's probably how he spends his real life as well.
Yeah, probably.
He's good. McKenna Grace is kind of the soul of the film, and she's a very talented young lady. And so it was really nice to sort of see her kind of expand upon the role that she had in Afterlife. And then, you know, the supporting cast, like, you know, I mentioned Kumail Nanjiani, he's hysterical. Patton Oswalt shows up for a great scene. And it's just, you just have a wonderful collection of old and new, and it kind of comes together in a way that, we'll call it celebratory. It's very celebratory of the Ghostbusters sort of writ large. And honestly, for a movie like this, like that's you're like 75% of the way there.
Right.
If you treat the material with respect and, you know, and have something new to contribute, like it's, you know, they're not reinventing the wheel here, but they're also sort of giving us a new pathway to follow as far as, you know, this world is concerned. And like I had a good time with this one. I had a good time with the previous one, and I have no doubt that whenever it comes, I will have a good time with the subsequent films.
How was the audience reaction?
It was good. Yeah, it was good. I was. It's funny because like you don't really think about it, but because you know I watched the original when I was probably too young, but we're in the movie theater and I hear like a child's voice and I'm like, is this okay? And then I'm like, well, if it was okay for me,
right?
You know, like this kid, there's no way this kid is you know, is that much younger than I was when I saw the original. And I could guarantee that this movie is probably less inappropriate for a child
yeah.
than the original Ghostbusters. So, but yeah, like it's very, it feels very all ages. Like there's none of, there's, you know, there, it gets a little scary in a couple of places and, you know, but like the language is pretty low key. There's not a lot of violence, not really any sex stuff to speak of. So, you know, if you think your kids can handle the spooky stuff,
yep.
like, I think this will be okay for the young ones, which is probably what you need to do.
Right.
Like you got to hook them young. You know, and if you can do that without, you know, without exposing them to swear words and boobies, I guess so much the better.
Excellent. Excellent. Hey, I want to mention too, you begin rehearsals this week. I'm so excited about this new show, the next show at Penobscot Theater, Mr. Burns.
Oh, man. Yeah, like it's we have our first read through tomorrow. I cannot wait. I've been fascinated by the show since I first learned of its existence, which I believe was when our friend Eric Gratton was in the show in, I believe, Seattle.
Wow.
It was one of the first, if not the first, West Coast productions of the show. I remember hearing about like him talking about that on social media and just being like, well, that is fascinating. I saw a production of it at Opera House Arts in Stonington a few years back, and that sort of sealed the deal. And I was like, oh, I love this show. It is dark and weird and hysterical and so reverent about the power of narrative and storytelling. And it's just, it's all the things that I love about theater sort of just jammed together in this wonderful sort of, you know, Simpsons shaped package. I absolutely cannot wait.
And a killer cast.
We're pretty stacked. Like we're very fortunate. You know, it's like I made the joke that's not really a joke. I was talking to Jenny Hart, who was also in the show, we were doing a promotional photo shoot on Friday, and I straight up told her, I'm like, I just, you know, I hope, you know, I hope your back's okay, because you're going to be carrying me through this whole thing.
Well, she's done that before.
Right. This is what I'm saying. Like, I'm not like, I just wanted to let her know that nothing has changed. And I expect to be, I expect her to Sherpa me up that particular hill from now until the first, until we reach the show's conclusion here at the first weekend of May.
I'm looking forward to it.
Going to be a lot of fun.
All right. Thanks, Al.
My pleasure.
Alan Adams talking movies and more with us here on Downtown and Past the Popcorn, 19 to go before the top of the hour.